Dr. Fatima Khafaghi is the ombudsperson of gender equality in Egypt, an office she established in 2002 and headed until end of 2006 when she resigned. Prior to this, Fatima worked for over 15 years as head of the gender program at UNICEF Egypt and briefly headed the regional office in UNIFEM in Amman, Jordan, in 1997. She has also been the Director General of the Community Development Program at the Social Fund. Dr. Fatima also worked as a senior gender consultant to UNDP, UN Women, European Commission, the Netherlands government, Aga Khan Foundation, among many other donor agencies. She holds a PhD in development planning from University of London and has authored several chapters, articles, and reports on women's rights. Thank you, Dr. Fatima, for joining us at IPI for this interview. I want to start by congratulating you on your new, or rather renewed, role as the Ombudsperson for Gender in Egypt. Kindly tell us more about the mission of this office, which we understand is an integral entity of the National Council of Women, and has the function and mandate of the National Council changed since the revolution.
Thank you. It's great to be at IPI, with whom I was corresponding for a long time, but never been there. So it's good to be in the premises of IPI. Actually, I took over a few months ago the Office of the Ombudsman on Gender Equality. The central office is in Cairo, but we also have branches in all governments of Egypt. And it's mainly to receive complainants who are suffering from any incidents of gender inequality. We have lawyers who take the complaints from women. Either they come to the offices or they send us their complaints, or we have hotlines also where they can put their complaints. And we start to investigate the complaints and also asking for supporting documents that prove that there has been discrimination against women. From there, we also have contacts with all ministries in Egypt who have Equal Opportunity Unit headed by someone who is at a senior level and with whom we negotiate until we solve the problem, or if it cannot be solved because there is a problem in the law or bylaws, then we go back to the law and the bylaws and see what is creating this problem, what are the loopholes in the legislation, and we start actually preparing legal and social documents and studies asking for the amendment of the laws or sort of getting more enforcement measures for the law. And we start to advocate from then with the National Council for Women and the media and other ministries.
And has the function and the mandate of the council changed since the revolution?
The mandate and the function did not change. But before the revolution, because it was the National Council of Women was headed by the wife of the ex-president, then it had more of political clout. So I would say the different ministries maybe has put much more effort in trying to solve complaints than now. Now, after the revolution, the kind of complaints also have a little bit changed, especially in public space. For instance, the physical and sexual harassment that happened to women political activists who are in the protests and demonstrations and so on, we have more of complaints of that sort, which we did not have actually before the revolution. Also, because we follow up on elections, because there are many women now who actually vote in the elections. So also we receive complaints about the harassment that happened to women when they are voting. So this is also something new. These two things are sort of an additional kind of violence against women and discrimination that happen in the public sphere.
And speaking of violence against women, we are indeed witnessing an alarming increase in violence and sexual harassment against women, both in the private and the public spheres. What accounts for this phenomenon? And do you agree with the claim that sexual harassment is a political tool to intimidate women?
Yes, because women of Egypt have been very, very active since the revolution. And politically, they're very active. Although, on the official level, they've been sort of excluded. They sort of abolished the gender quota. There aren't any women in the political forums now and so on. But women of all ages are very active in the political parties, in the protest, in the movement, in youth movements and so on. And they actually sort of voice their protest and their wish that the revolution fulfills it's the objective for which it actually started. And there is a fear, I think, from women. To try to exclude them from everywhere is something that has been systematic since some time now. And I think to scare them from public space is one of the political instruments being used to try to frighten them and make them stay at home, which is not helping at all. I mean, on the contrary, women more and more insist of being in the public space and protesting and so on. So I think, yeah, in many cases, especially the systematic gang harassment that happened is a very obvious sign of political weapon to frighten women.
And has the Egyptian government done enough to ensure the protection of women and the punishment of perpetrators? And also, what about youth groups and individual activists endeavoring to combat sexual violence against women, such as Operation Anti-Sexual Harassment? How do you view their work?
I don't think the government is doing enough, actually, to put an end to that for so many reasons. I can understand that they can't really change in such a short period because there hasn't been any reform in the police forces. So they are not really sort of being trained on how to deal with cases of violence. They don't know how to write a good police report. They're also very much dominated by the culture. So they think that if a woman goes to the police, which happens more often now than before, and tries to complain and insist on that the police writes a police record so that a proper investigation can happen afterwards, then the policeman would say, your family, if they know, they will not be happy. Why don't you hush about it? Trying, you know, to show as if it's shameful, actually, if she complains. So this is another problem. And the most important thing is that a police record should be really written well, because then it goes to the district attorney and the investigation starts. So without this record, then there is no investigation that can happen. And I don't see any serious training of the policemen at this point. Secondly, also, there are loopholes in the law. We have a penal code that penalizes acts of violence and sexual harassment, but there are so many loopholes in the law itself, so it's not also helping. On the contrary, the youth groups and movements involved in addressing violence against women and protecting actually young women when they are in the protests are doing a fantastic job. They are there in the side by side with them. They try to protect them when the attacks happen to them. They do psychological also rehabilitation for them. They have lawyers who can defend them. And they are doing as much as they can with their limited resources. But I think they're actually also evolving and learning, you know, how to be more effective in protecting young women. They're also looking for people who are with them in the government or the National Council of Women to help enforcing a better law and also to change some of the things like putting cameras in the underground stations, because usually also harassment happens in the metro stations, of also having the government and the university hospitals be responsible for the health services provided to victims of violence, because until now they don't take care of them from the health point of view. There's so many pressure actually now that this act should be stopped or should be addressed more seriously.
Do you believe that advocating for equal citizenship for men and women can better advance women's rights at this critical juncture in Egypt?
Yes, I believe so. And many people are joining the women's movement, and many men as well, which is a good sign. And the whole issue of, you know, equal citizenship is very much being brought everywhere and advocated and sort of a very strong demand on the regime. And men have really seen how women are being so much active, and what they're doing also during and after the revolution has showed that, you know, these are real citizens that deserve to be equal in every sense. So I think it's something that, you know, many are fighting for now.
How important are references to international normative instruments in the Constitution to ensuring women's equality? And are there alternative frameworks that could be used?
The Constitution on the whole is one of the worst constitutions that Egypt has ever had. Nobody is happy with the Constitution except the regime, because it actually does not address so many rights and does not also have enough protection for vulnerable groups. It does not talk about violence. It does not talk about children's rights, women's rights, gender equality, and so on. And it has no mention to international instrument at all, which is also a major obstacle. And political parties are considering that this is not a constitution that we should stick to. And everybody is putting a pressure on the president, who has announced, I think last month, that there is an intention of forming a small group to look at the articles in the constitution that are contentious and many people do not agree.
Do you think there are alternative frameworks that could be used, alternative to the international instruments?
I personally don't think so. I mean, Egypt is party to international instrument and one of the first countries that joined lots of the international instrument, if not all. We all respect our religion. We respect our culture that is positive. But international instruments have been put also by Muslims, by Egyptians. It's not put by the West alone. And we all have to stick to it.
What role can the international community play to support women in Egypt?
I think the international community has to differentiate between what is real democracy and what is a false democracy, because I think the idea is that since we have elections now in Egypt and since we have a new constitution, then they think that we have true democracy. But they don't know how the elections, how has it been used actually to exploit people because of poverty, how it exploits people in the name of religion, and also which is not, I mean, a true democracy. So I think the international community should look deeper into the difference between elections in Egypt and election in the West, and try to help, not to repeat the same mistakes, because the West has actually helped a lot the dictator before, and now I think they're helping another kind of dictator in the name of religion, which we're not happy about and which we are determined to change, and not necessarily to wait for another 4 years until the next term of the election comes.
And finally, how do you see the future of the status of women in Egypt? What worries you most, and what, on the other hand, brings optimism?
What worries me is that using religion and culture specificity again and the family values would use this to deprive women from their rights. So this is something that I'm afraid of. But on the other hand, when I see the increasing number of women who were not at all feminists or talking about women's rights before, and men also who were even against gender equality, how now the numbers is so much increasing in support of gender equality, in support of women's rights, and with an insistence that there is no going back, because Egyptian women have participated fully in the revolution and they want to participate in the democracy one day, and they're not going back home. This insistence is giving hope that things are going to change.
On that hopeful note, we end this interview. I thank you so much for participating in this interview, and we wish you all the best in your new role.
Thanks a lot.